Mesa Radio. The African voice. It's all about you.
Going to be in discussion with a representative from the Tears Foundation, and we're talking secondary victimization. Do join the conversation on Twitter. It's at UNISA Radio. On Facebook, we are UNISA Radio, and I'll read out your comments a little bit after the interview. On the line right now, we do have Monica Mwahi, who's an intervention specialist at the Tears Foundation. How are you, Mwahi?
I'm fine, and you. Thank you for inviting me into your platform, and it's an honor to be here.
Thank you. Now, today we're talking secondary victimization, which is quite a sensitive issue. Please just open up the conversation by breaking down to us what is secondary victimization.
Okay, it's a very sensitive issue when we come to secondary victimization.
Mm.
Now, when we break it down, it's where does it happen, okay?
Okay.
And how does it happen? Now, where is when you inform people that have been a victim of certain situations and they start to judge you? That's the secondary one. And how does it happen is when you want to come out and you are afraid to come out,
mm,
and you go to this facility and you try to have a confidentiality place where you can report these cases, then it comes out as if you are joking, or maybe something you have done on yourself. There's a self-blame. There's an attitude of saying, where were you? Why did you go there at this stage at this time? So
mm-hmm.
that's a victimization or secondary victimization, as we've said.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it is important that we understand that we are not to be blamed. We believe you, and we'll walk the journey with you. As Tears Foundation, that's what we say to you.
Mm. And how can we avoid having a victim being re-traumatized by maybe the things that we say, or maybe like what you making them go through the same experience by questioning them and saying, no, this is, your story is false. Why didn't this and this happen? What's the timeline? How can we avoid that?
Unfortunately, we cannot avoid, because people are not the same. You know, when you go to a facility, you don't know how are you going to be treated. So we need to empower and train our first line people that we go to. You know, the first person that you go to, they should be able to understand and clarify,
mm,
and be able to say to you, I hear you.
Mm.
You know, those are the important questions that and confirmations that we need from an individual. When you say to an individual, I hear you, then that person won't be secondary victimized.
Mm.
So the first line people is an awareness that we need to do. You know, training, it's not to say they don't get training, but they should be a way of attending to trauma, because sometimes trauma and victims, they are aging. They need assistance. They're just in a space where they are alone. So
mm.
we need to address them in a proper manner of saying, yes, we understand you. Yes, we'll go with you through this journey. Yes, you're going to take a statement, like at the police station, when you go there. They should have a private room of interviewing you and giving them information of saying, I've been raped. Those are the things that we normally get. There's been a domestic violence in my house. I need to report 1, 2, 3. My husband has just slapped me, and they will say to you, just go to your house and talk it over.
Mm.
Something that you can discuss. We don't need that. We need a person to go with you, start saying to you, this is domestic violence. So you need to clarify each and every case according to the way they come to you and be able to refer. That is why, as we said to you, we want to empower the very first line people. Awareness should be there, out there, and people should understand how and where and which things to expect when they report.
Mm. And Mwahi, now that you've touched on trauma, maybe let's go to that to say, what is trauma? What is re-traumatizing? Or what is the meaning of it? And what triggers trauma?
Okay. Firstly, I would say the definition of trauma. We have learned that trauma is not just an event that took place, okay,
mm-hmm.
in the past. It's also the imprint that was left with the experience in your mind. Remember that when you are being raped or you're being abused, there's something that is left behind, and we try to overcome it by closing it, you know, putting it at the back of our mind, your brain and your body. this imprint has an ongoing consequences in our lifestyle, in our life, you know. And when you grow up, you remember you saw your father beating your mother, and you try to ignore it and say, that's a norm thing. Our norms and standards, they define trauma in an intensive way of growing up. Our brains will stop those moments and vision, and when you grow up, they will come up in a sense of when somebody just tried to tap into something, it brings out the trauma that you had while you were a child. Mm. So trauma, the definition of trauma is something that happened long time ago, and it come out in a way that you don't understand. So think about it in the capacity to think that when trauma occurs, the real perspective and threat is violence, danger, death, harassment, and lack of control. Mm. So the common prediction of individual development is also in the mind. Remember that we've got people who are suffering from PTSD. You understand?
Mm.
So those are the things that they influence, and they go into the second step of trauma. So trauma is something that we need to identify and deal with it.
Mm. Now, with the findings of the trauma-informed care in behavioral health services, they propose that the traumatic stress plays a significant role in perpetuating and also exacerbating mental illness. Now, as with trauma and substance use disorders, there is a bi-directional relationship with mental...
You know what? Hello? I can't hear you. Maybe if you can just talk a little bit louder, then I'll be able to understand your question.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me now?
This is much better. Yes, my dear, you can go on.
Much better. Okay, thank you, ma'am. I was saying, okay, let's talk about trials. When a victim is on stand and they're being cross-examined, is there, are there boundaries or maybe a line that can be drawn?
Yes. Let's say you are in, let's put a scenario as a child, because we don't allow our child to go into court and be re-traumatized. You know, you're reliving the scene or the scenario.
Mm.
We want them to be in a safe space, you know, where you can report or give in evidence in a safe space. Our kids need to be counseled, not counseled as being guided to what they must say, but to be calm and be able to narrate the story as it is. So with kids, we say they should have a safe space. And when you go to trials, sometimes the prosecutors who will be questioning you, they've got, you know, they want to find out the real integrity of what happened. Sometimes you feel that there's a secondary trauma, but they will need you to relate and narrate in full, you know. Our understanding of rape, we call certain things inappropriate. We're never told that it's a vagina, there's a penis. We call them moo-moos and flies.
Mm, mm.
So at the end of the day, that can throw your case out of the court. So we need to teach our people when they go to court, just to prepare them, to say, please talk, say it as it is. Because the minute you talk about something different, it's not that we don't have it in our vocal blood. We don't have it in the law or in the writing of all the laws and the rights and the protocols.
Mm.
So that is why sometimes we feel that we are being victimized.
Mm.
And yes, there is a way that they ask questions so that you feel guilty, you feel self-blame, you become anxiety, you become anxious, you are powerless. You are embarrassed because you have to relieve those conditions.
Mm.
And why we say to you, you need to attend counseling. When that moment comes, you are able to talk about it without feeling those feelings that are already indicated. It will resurface them, but you need to be very strong.
Okay. And according to... Also, the trauma-informed care in behavioral health, they say that mental illnesses increase the risk of experiencing trauma, and also trauma increases the risk of developing psychological symptoms and mental disorders. Now, how true is this memoir according to your experience and knowledge, and how can victims be you know, assisted? Because it seems like there's no, you know, the all extremes.
Okay. You know, when we have these trauma-informed care and behaviors, I'm not an expert. You know, we normally say we cannot fight these GBV and all the trauma and all the victimization alone. We've got people who specialize in certain categories. That is why we say the trauma can proceed to developing a PTSD.
Mm.
That's where we send our people to say that, because they specialize and they know, and they know exactly how to deal with a person with PTSD, and they can contain that person. I deal with GBV. I can contain a person over the phone before I transfer that person to the counselor nearer to the place where they are based. So with PTSD and anxiety and all the mindset of a person, we need specialized people to report you and give you statistics, especially with what is happening. It is true. Yes, we know. That's why we work with them, because at the end of the day, we need to work together to fight this. Remember, we grew up in the norm and standard that we say, boy is a boy, again is a girl. So we need to change that scenario as well. So to change the scenario where a person knows that if I'm a boy, I'm going to be a man and I must treat the person this way. Those are the norms that we enforce to our kids. We give them that information to say, if you're a boy, you do this. At the end of the day, when we try to change that, then that's where they have got the behavioral changes and they try to not to understand what is happening. So you need really to find a psychologist or as somebody who works for FedEx who can be able to give you more information based on the statistics, especially after the lockdown. There was so much in triggers that perpetuated to GBV to be a high.
How can our institutions and society protect rape victims and maybe just overall victims of any kind of trauma?
I can't hear you breaking what you said.
I was saying, just lastly, just to close the conversations, in terms of institutions, how can institutions and society protect victims, but not only victims of sexual assaults, just overall victims who have gone through any kind of trauma?
Okay. The institutions need to have information, because remember, when we go into the institution and there's a center for wellness, you know, the wellness center, people are already associate you with something that has happened to you. So that's stigma. Okay, they need to have a way of saying, okay, we've got you, we understand you, contain. When you refer, you know you've contained a person, and that person needs to move with the program of moving forward. You know, the rape is something that can happen 20 years back, but it will come back. And we need to understand why. We need to identify and have a way, better way forward. You understand? So when institute and our society can have a proper information and a way of dealing, containment is important. That's what I'm saying. Resources, you know, to refer. You cannot deal with that person, and that person has been stigmatized. That's why they come once, and the second time it's already in the campus. Let's say the campus of your space where you see people coming in and out. They've got different scenarios or cases that they will come and report. But at the end of the day, a friend will tell another friend, and another friend will tell another friend. At the end of the day, the story of that child will be known by everybody in the campus. So you need to associate that thing, not to develop into a stigmatization situation. That person can be able to go into a counseling without fearing that people will say, hey, you know. Unfortunately, we don't have facilities at the varsities that they can be separate from the venue. But I would suggest that institutions and the community, they should have, you know, a place where it's not even recognized that this person is going there to do 1, 2, 3. With an abortion, let's take an abortion. When you enter there, there's abortion, there's killing and everything. And everybody, when you enter that thing, even if you're not going to, you enter that space, even if you're not going to do abortion, you need a scan to been done to you.
Mm.
You know, because you can go to that place. Already you are associated with abortion.
Wow, that's heavy. Memakhe, thank you very much for your time, and thank you very much also for the insight that you shared with us.
Okay. Thank you so much for being here. Please, people should contact us, because we can take you and refer you to the nearest place without any payment, you know, when you try to get assistance with whatever you're dealing with. It's the best way that we say to you, come to us, we have free services. We can refer you, and you can have information. The *134*7355 is the platform where you can connect and ask for assistance in each and every way. They will call you within. It's like a command center, mm-hmm. where you call and they will give you a place where you can go. With us, those places will come into your phone, whether it's a smartphone or an old one. They will give you those places, and they will tell you, okay, you are in Mpumalanga. The nearest police station is checked. Next to you, the USSD will figure it out.
Mm, okay. Thank you very much for also sharing those details.
Thank you so much, my dear. Thank you for giving me the time as well, okay?
All right. Thank you. Was Memwahi. Her name is Monica Mwahi. Thank you. That was Memwahi. Her name is Monica Mwahi. She is an intervention specialist at the Tears Foundation, and she was just sharing with us her knowledge on secondary victimization. You're tuned into UNISA Radio, the African Voice. It's all about you. Your comments will be read out just after this.
Visit our Facebook page for updates, interviews, competitions, and much more. UNISA Radio.